3D printing today, show number 577. Changes to the latest XLs. Foaming filament. Foam infill.
Welcome back to 3D Printing Today, the podcast about all aspects of 3D printing. Hobby, professional, industrial. It doesn't matter what kind of 3D printing, we cover it all. My name's Andy Cohen, and I'm here with Mr. Whitney Potter.
How you doing, Andy?
So since this is our show where we talk a lot about foam.
That's true, the foam show.
I thought this would be an appropriate news story for us to chat about how Nike has introduced the Air Max 1000, a fully 3D printed sneaker.
Now they say it's fully 3D printed, but it has the characteristic Nike airbag heel pad that does not look like it's 3D printed. It looks like it's placed while being printed, perhaps, but
picky.
Yeah, well,
you're such a picky person.
You know, I just take
the air out of everything.
It's the same problem I have with you know, it's a fully 3D printed house. No, it's fully 3D printed walls that you then put a regular truss roof on. But
yeah,
anyways,
I agree. Yeah, you're probably right. But we note right away that they're laceless. You just slip your foot in.
They're kind of like the ones that you printed the other day.
Yeah, but
in terms of design.
Yeah, so it's kind of radical. If you wear a pair of these, people will look at your feet for sure.
And I think that's the idea.
Yeah. Yes. And they do look really nice, and they're printed as a single material with that red insert in the heel.
Mm-hmm.
I note in the article also they talk about varying the densities, which means that as you print the shoe, in some areas it's harder and in some areas it's softer, which was something we were exploring and playing with TPU LW, which we are going to talk about a little bit more in segments coming up.
Yeah.
I got to admit, I think it looks really nice. And
it only comes in one color.
Yeah, white.
It's oatmeal.
Yeah, oatmeal. Which is an off-white, a tannish white, I guess. Although if you scroll down to the vid, you'll see one that's red. There's a red version of really make your feet stand out amongst the boredom of the rest of shoe technology. I note the price is, what was it, $210,
which is not outrageous as Nikes go.
Yes, that's well within the realm of reality for most high-end Nike purchasers. Mm-hmm. Article also talks about Gucci and another company, Cintillet. So there are other companies looking at doing 3D printed footwear. I think it's cool. I mean, when you think about this, you remember years ago, a container ship went down filled with Nikes.
Ah, yes.
And the Nikes were washing up on shore everywhere for years.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, you know, this is a better way to go for all of our footwear. Instead of producing tens of thousands of pairs of shoes to fit all the different sizes, you scan your foot, and that's your public file that you use with these companies. They get your exact fit, and you either order it or you go to where they make them.
Yeah.
And that should be how they do it. Instead of shipping shoes, they ship the material.
All right. That said, I don't think that's how Nike is doing this. There's no mention of doing it custom custom sizes, and it sounds like they're being printed by a startup in Germany. So
they'll be making them in the tens of thousands in different sizes.
Well, possibly.
Maybe the ship will sink and we'll get them for free.
Possibly. I don't know.
What's coming up on our show this week, Whitney?
Let's see. We're going to start out talking about the latest changes to the XL.
And then we start talking about foaming filament.
And then we'll have a look at foam infill.
Let's do it. So we now have our Prusa XL for a bit over 2 years, actually. I think we got it in early 2023. So yeah, it's just under 2 years. Feels like it's a lot longer. I wonder why. Why does it feel so much longer? Feels like I've had it for forever.
Yeah, it does.
And you know, and the question was raised, so what are people getting today? When you buy a 3D printer right out of the gate, the very first version of it. It's safe assumption that in time, the machine's going to be updated and changed, and there'll be some improvements as they learn to do things. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, a website has kind of compiled what they've learned directly from the manufacturers to make the comparison for us. And we've included that URL for that website in our show notes, but it's from investigate.de. Do you see that?
Yes, yeah.
And so we're going to kind of go through what they've discovered. The first thing is they changed the connector on the Nextruders to the tools. It's a different connector now. I believe it's a smaller one, and it attaches with two M3 screws. The previous version did not physically hold the connector body to the body of the Nextruder.
Okay.
And they found that you'd get spurious disconnects. Mm.
Yeah, the connector itself is quite small and delicate, so it makes sense to have some like a bracket holding the it's basically a strain relief on it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the next one, which is a biggie, that's not what I thought it was. They're basically just, it's not that big a deal, really. Mm-hmm. They're changing a lot of parts out for injected molded. Mm-hmm. So like the casing for the UI panel, I'm thinking, wow, by now they should have a touchscreen.
Uh-huh.
Nope, it's still that rotating knob.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I think stinks. These days it's cheaper and easier to just do a touchscreen for uh-huh. both the developers, the manufacturing, and most importantly, your users.
Yeah, those touchscreens are cheap now.
Yeah, so they didn't update that at all.
Yep.
But little things like the planetary gear cover is now injected molded. Yeah.
It makes sense for them. I mean, at some point, it's just cheaper to injection mold things than it is once you amortize the cost of the tooling.
They've changed out the heat bed tiles. It's a different surface. Instead of the matte version, they're now shiny. Mm-hmm. Other than that, we don't see much of a difference between what they gave us before and what we have today. And it's those tiles that is the reason for the long wait after they come up to heat.
Mm-hmm. And the whole thing equalized.
To equalize the heat across the break of the tile. So there is a negative to having these tiles versus one big heater. The trade-off, I don't think it was that big of a deal. You do get better control with the tiles. Mm-hmm. I'll admit that, and you can save a lot of energy by using the tiles, but you also have to sit there and wait for it to heat up and then absorb the heat. In my experience, if you don't wait long enough, it will not stick. The material will not stick during the nozzle cleaning part of the weight at the beginning.
Gotcha.
They put in a new planetary gear within the Nextruder. They basically drilled it in little holes in it to lessen the mass. I think that's a good idea. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing to do that. It doesn't affect anything else. It just minimizes the weight and the mass of the Nextruder. Different nozzle seals. I don't think, we call these nozzle blockers. They call them nozzle seals. There's a little orange material that when the Nextruder parks the tool, that nozzle presses against that little orange strip.
Yeah, it's a silicone or something, right?
It actually does. It's actually a pretty important thing, and I'm glad that they moved that from what was a kind of a strip that could easily come off that strip of metal that it's covering, and now it's a completely covered silicone material. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at what they've done, and I may order 5 new ones to put mm-hmm. on my machine because I really like what they've done there. I think that was an improvement because I find myself having to pull that red material loop back onto the metal strip on a regular basis.
Gotcha. Yeah, it looks like now they're dipping it rather than just wrapping it.
I think that's an improvement I'm mm-hmm. going to do.
Yep.
Some other improvements, and by the way, of all of these improvements, that's the first one I'm going to make. I'm going to put on my
machine. Yeah, you're going to upgrade it. Yeah.
The next one is this one seems to have come from the usage of the containment, the way of containing the machine. They've changed a lot of the Nextruder parts from PETG to PC-CF, in other words, polycarbonate with carbon fiber inclusion. And this is one where you really have to do this if you're putting your machine into containment.
And then you're heating things up.
You're heating it up. Yeah. Over time, the PETG may deform. And not necessarily, but it might deform. Mm-hmm. And this is something I would have done at the very beginning, and I'm really annoyed that they waited until now to do it. Maybe they didn't know how to print in PCCF. That could have been it.
Yeah, it was a less common material back then.
But so. In my opinion, they should make these parts available to the people that bankrolled them by buying the machine early.
Yep.
On the other hand, if they, I haven't looked yet, and I will report back here, but I should be able to get the files for these parts and print them myself, which I probably will do. The pulley O-rings, they've changed the O-rings for some reason. I'm not sure why. Maybe they were wearing out. These are the O-rings that are on the pulleys. Not even sure where these go. So I'm not even sure what the problem was there. They no longer ship with 0.6 millimeter nozzles.
Oh, come to find out.
I wonder why.
Yeah.
And now they ship with 0.4 millimeter nozzles. The reason for this may have something to do with multi-tool printing. 0.6 millimeter nozzles ooze more than 0.4 millimeter nozzles. Gee, what a surprise.
Who would have guessed?
Yeah. And then there's a whole bunch of changes that they made in the software. They finally added pressure advance. I'm not even sure what stealth mode is. Do you know what stealth mode is?
No idea.
Let's go take a look. Okay, we went and took a look, and it basically limits a whole bunch of settings, which in turn makes the printer quieter.
But slower.
Well,
presumably.
I'm not sure about that. I do notice a change in how loud the printer is, and it's not that big a deal.
I mean, why wouldn't you be running stealth mode all the time then if you weren't giving something up for it, right? Because,
yeah.
I mean, who wants a printer that's noisier than it needs to be?
I don't care. It's in the garage.
Well, sure.
But why would I care?
Right.
It could be as noisy as it wants.
Okay.
I don't care about that. If it's in your bedroom, what the hell is it in your bedroom for?
Well, there's other problems with that.
Yeah, that's why I've always wondered why people made such a big deal about the noise level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't want to be breathing that stuff 24/7 anyway. But
anyway, a whole bunch of other things, phase stepping, you can cancel objects, printing with different nozzle sizes. That was a biggie.
Uh-huh.
They finally fixed that. I'm not sure what the touch screen is. Scarf seams, yeah, and filament stuck detection. I still have problems with filament stuck detection. It's got nothing to do with software, you guys. It's those metal balls with the springs that get material in them. That's the real problem here. Mm-hmm. So we don't see any changes to the sensors at all, which is a bit of a shock to me, because in my opinion, that was one of the biggest problems with the Prusa XL. Their extremely cheap and simplistic approach to sensors was just inappropriate, incorrect, and that should be fixed.
Yeah.
So anyway, those are the changes that we see. Yeah, this is actually a segment about ESUN, ESUN filaments. I first heard about foaming TPU from a different company. We did talk about that on the show in the past, but I can't recall offhand the name of that company, although it's really not that important at the moment, because one of our forum members, who goes by the handle Sophie, made me aware of ESUN's foaming filament.
Uh-huh.
So I took a look and found that they did sell it on Amazon for a fairly low price, easily affordable. I think it was like $20 at the time. I don't know if it's still that low. Well, it's not a full, how do I say it? It is a full 2.2 pound spool.
Uh-huh.
But because of what it is, it looks less than 2.2 pounds.
So you're saying it's denser?
I believe it is. Now it's not just TPU. So Esun as a company has been around for almost as long as I've had my original home 3D printer. That's mm-hmm. going on. Well, I've had my home 3D printer now for more than 12 years. And so I'm pretty sure Esun's been around for at least 10, maybe 11 of those years.
Yeah, they've been a filament producer for a long time.
Yeah, and that says a lot about it because, you know, companies have come and gone mm-hmm. so much in the past 12 years. The fact that they're still around says a lot. And when you look at what they offer, they've got an enormous assortment of different materials. Just PLA alone, there's like two or three different types of PLA, and four or five different types of PLA. In TPU, they offer a range of TPUs. Now, whether or not you can get them all, that's a question. They may not stock them all, and to buy them directly from Esun, they're not a consumer-facing company. Mm-hmm. You have to buy it in bulk.
Well, they do have an e-store, but the shipping and stuff may not work mm-hmm. out on that. So
yeah, but if you look at their filaments, it looks like they have two different kinds of foaming filament: PLA LW and TPU LW.
Okay.
And the foaming filament conceptually sounds like a pretty intriguing idea. Basically, the idea is that as you increase your heat and slow down things, the bubbles appear in the material, and those bubbles decrease the density of the material. So it becomes, you know, like a sponge almost.
Uh-huh.
And at least for TPU, I don't know about the PLA side, but for TPU, it supposedly makes it more flexible, less rigid, more flexible.
You can imagine, probably less tough too.
Makes it less heavy, so it's mm-hmm. a much, much lighter material, mm-hmm. less dense. However, there's a trade-off for that. And we're going to get into those trade-offs because we actually purchased some of the TPU LW, and we're going to do a detailed analysis of it before we try using it with actual projects. And we'll let you guys know exactly what we learned. But the TPU LW is probably one of the most complicated to use materials that we've gotten in years. I remember, like, for example, with early nylons,
uh-huh.
you had all these different weird settings you had to do.
Right. I remember the early nylons were also foaming was kind of a unintentional side effect of
right.
them if you didn't dry them very
right.
well.
Right. And TPU, regular TPU.
Yeah, we'll do that
under
the right,
foam.
Wrong conditions.
And mm-hmm. and the way Esun describes it, it seems, according to their descriptions, that this will behave the same way. You cook it a little bit too much and it mm-hmm. starts to, you get micro bubbles in it, mm-hmm. so it changes the color.
Yeah.
So that's what we'll be looking for.
Gotcha.
We'll do that one next.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of, you know, the story of the engineer at 3M who was trying to create a new super adhesive and failed because it just wasn't very sticky. And then it was the birth of the 3M Post-it note.
That's right.
So yeah. So you end up with an unintended effect, and you're like, let's just make that a feature.
Well, let's see if that's the case with this material.
Right.
We're going to find out for ourselves.
So, wouldn't you like to be able to print really big things and have them be really strong and do it really fast?
Well, yeah,
everybody
would like that.
Right, yeah. So you think about what is sort of what keeps you from doing that. Well, you have to 3D print a lot of material in order to do that. Oh, I should also add to that, cheap.
Oh, yeah, cheap. Yeah, cheap's yeah, good.
Right.
Cheap's good.
Cheap is good,
cheap
too, yeah. So the problem is, if you're printing a large object, in order for it to be strong and rigid, you have to put a lot of material into
it. Yeah, you got that infill.
Right. So that's expensive. Yeah, and not only is it expensive in terms of the material, it's expensive in terms of the time. right? So to print something with a high density, you know, a 50% infill or something, versus just printing the shell, is gonna, you know, it take 10 times as long.
Oh, yeah, at least
putting out that much material.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And the more time you spend on a printer, the less liable it is to, you know,
and the stronger work. The stronger and harder that you want it, the more rigid you want it, the more time and the more material.
Right. So what if we could have a little hack to get around that, right? So I started thinking about it, like, what if we could print just the shell of the material?
Just the outline.
Just the outline, right?
Just the outer perimeters.
Right.
No infill.
No infill. So print 0% infill and add the infill later.
Like a multi-layered vase mode, basically.
Right. Yeah.
So, but vase mode's only one layer, so you want to.
Ooh, you can do it. You can do it in vase mode.
Yeah, I guess you could.
I have been using vase mode. Okay. So basically, the concept is you print just an empty shell of what you want, of whatever your object is, and it's fast, it doesn't take much material, and then you add the infill later, and you add the infill in about a minute instead of a day. And the way it works is basically you take whatever you're printing and fill it with foam. After the fact.
Oh, I remember now. You talked about this in a previous segment.
I
remember you telling me.
I don't think we had the mics on when we.
But I remember you telling me that there's another aspect to this besides the foam. And that's, it's not just that it's fast.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just that it's not using the material. It's also that you can go way taller.
Well, sure, yeah, because you can print things in different parts and put them together.
Since it's hollow, you can say make a cylinder that is telescoping.
Sure, yeah, that is another application of this, is that you can print parts that telescope and that would not have adequate structural strength.
Right. But the outline or the perimeters are all there.
Right. So basically what you're doing is instead of making a 3D print that is structural, you're making a 3D print that's just basically a single-use mold, and then you're putting a structural foam inside it.
Okay, structural foam. What do you mean a structural foam?
Okay, so I started doing some research on this and some experimentation, and my first application was, this is sort of, you know, like a chair leg. It's just a telescoping cylinder.
Yeah.
And my first thought was, well, I'll go down to the Home Depot and get a can of spray foam, right? Because I get a can of spray foam for, I don't know, $5 or something, and it's, you know, really easy to get, really easy to use. And so that was my first go at it, and that might work for some applications. The problem with spray foam is here's a piece of just cured spray foam. It's squishy.
Yeah.
It doesn't have, you know, great rigidity.
Yeah.
And
it expands a lot.
Well, all the foams expand, but the other problem with spray foam is that it doesn't cure very well in the absence of air.
Oh.
So if you've got a long, skinny, narrow tube like that, the foam in the middle of it doesn't cure that well. And if you press in on the ends, sort of squeeze it together like that. Here, let me show you. That the foam,
oh, I see,
achieves so little density in the middle that it doesn't really do what I need it to.
Yeah, it doesn't. You can untelescope it a touch.
Yeah, but you can feel that foam squishing in there.
Yeah. So okay. So why not put the foam in using like a tube to get it, or better yet, before you telescope it, put a tiny bit at the top and put it just a little bit of time as you telescope the thing open.
Yeah, that's basically what I did. I used this straw on the can to squirt it all the way down to the bottom. But as it starts rising, the part that's down at the bottom is then cut off from the air.
Oh,
and
I see.
The moisture in the air that causes gotcha. It to cure. So that's just never going to work really well in a confined space. There are some brands of it that do that. I remember years ago I had a construction project where we were gluing 4-inch thick sheets of rigid insulation to a ceiling that was made out of steel. And we ended up doing that with spray foam. So I know there is a brand that will do that, but the wrong brand doesn't cure under those conditions. So you got to get the right chemistry. So anyway.
So send me the link to that brand. I'll make sure it's in our show notes.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. It's good stuff. Just the standard, the cheap stuff you get at Home Depot. You get it anywhere.
Hmm.
But that's not the optimal solution. Rather than the squishy foam, my next go was what's called a pour foam, where you have an A resin and a B resin. You stir them together, and this stuff is evil. I mean, literally, you're stirring together I use old yogurt containers, and you're stirring it up, and you've got about 30 seconds to get it all mixed together, and then it starts to foam, and it starts to heat up, and it's just like brrr. Like, so you better have everything planned, be wearing all your PPE, because you don't want once it's cured, it's inert, but you do not want to get it on yourself when it's in its raw form. And it starts to foam up in this sort of,
and if it heats up, it could melt your material.
It could. It depends on how large a volume of it you're trying to pour at once.
So
Is
that this?
So this is the foam in its completely cured, and it is completely rigid. Hmm. This is a 6-pound density foam, and I just got it off of Amazon.
Looks like somebody blew their nose into a cylinder.
Well, this was actually overflowed out of the top of my mold, and I cut it off.
Pretty hard.
But it is absolutely, absolutely rigid. Yeah. And this is the
this is the telescoping cylinder with the you can't squish it anymore.
Yeah.
Let me take a picture of this for our audience.
Yep.
Looks like a big cylinder.
Yep. Now, I did have another one of those that I had printed. Rather than a telescoping cylinder, I just printed a long tapered cylinder. Fired up Gigantor to print about a 18-inch long cylinder just to test how well it cured. And I was able to break it, but it does take a fair amount of force.
So if you were to print this cylinder, the big one, mm-hmm. With infill...
Yeah.
My bet is that would take you more than 24 hours.
Oh, easily.
And to get it this strong, quite a bit more than 24
right.
hours. How long did it take you to print this?
Printing that in vase mode on Gigantor, each one of those segments took about 20 minutes.
So
that's with a 1 mil nozzle.
That total is about an hour.
Yeah.
And then how long did it take you to mix and pour the foam?
You measure them out very carefully, but once you start mixing and pouring, it's about 2 minutes.
Yeah, you got to do it fast.
Is the only all the time you have.
Yeah, and it's pretty rigid. This is a good weapon, actually. You can whack somebody over the head with
right.
this. And it's light. It's not heavy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yet it's incredibly yep. rigid.
So the idea is...
This is viable. This is a viable method to... But get your goal without taking forever.
Yeah.
Wow.
So the next idea is, make a chair or a stool or something to actually test it under human body weight.
Yeah.
I'm pretty impressed with it. And the nice thing about it is that, those telescoping sections, I mean, they are locked together. I mean, so I just pulled them out and engaged them, but there's no untelescoping that at this point.
So I don't know if you remember, it was a while ago. Like a long time ago, years, mm-hmm. years ago. And I was printing guitars.
Yes, yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah.
So the way I designed the guitars is there was a center part where the bridge of the guitar was on the end of one center, mm-hmm. and the other end of the center part of the body of the guitar is where the neck bolted onto.
Right.
And that's
where all the strain in the guitar
was. That's where all the strain was. So my design included... carbon fiber rods.
Right.
Remember that? And
yeah.
I figured out a way to bolt the bridge directly through onto the rods,
mm-hmm.
and the rods went through the section where the bolts for the neck were. And I was able to get some stability. It wasn't perfect.
Mm-hmm.
The strings could still make the plastic move over time.
Right.
And you still had to loosen your strings. Otherwise, eventually the body wouldn't let you tune it any longer.
Right.
I still have those guitars on my wall, mm-hmm. by
yeah.
the way. Anyway.
The action may be a little bit higher.
Yeah. Well, I loosened the strings, so okay. It's not that big a deal. But anyway, the idea was, instead of putting in the carbon fiber, leave a gap,
mm-hmm.
and print it solid with a hole and mix some epoxy resin,
mm-hmm.
and pour it in there.
Yeah.
And so it would be even stronger than the carbon fiber.
Yeah.
Well, I tried to do that, and the first problem I had was the stuff migrated through the fused filament.
Yeah,
and leaked.
Yeah, the epoxy. Pretty much any, the resins will do that.
Yeah.
You'll lose a little bit of it through it, unless you've got absolutely watertight, which most prints are not.
So what happened was the resin kind of went into the layers, mm-hmm. on the inner cavity of
yeah.
this part.
So the way to fix that is to mix up a little bit of resin and paint the inside of the cavity first, let it cure, and then you've sealed it.
However, a more significant problem happened, mm-hmm. after that, and thankfully I was prepared for that kind of a thing, because it would have made a hell of a mess. I still have pieces of resin stuck out there. Anyway, a more significant issue happened after that, and as it cured, it heated up so much that it melted the plastic.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. Depending on pretty much all of those AB resin chemistries are exothermic to some extent.
Yeah. So it didn't work.
And yeah, you got to be careful of how much you're pouring at a time. I actually, years ago when I was a wooden boat builder, I actually burned myself pretty good with epoxy. Because I was mixing up about a quart of resin and doing a way bigger piece of fabric lamination than I should have been trying to do in one go. And it basically kind of just takes off.
Yeah.
It's
dangerous stuff.
The exothermic, as it heats up, the heating of it makes it cure faster. And so it's sort of like this, just the reaction just takes off and goes critical, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts burning it and decomposing the resin. It gets so hot, so you lose the character, the engineering qualities of the resin. You lose, it's producing all these nasty volatiles.
Don't play with this stuff,
guys. And if you get it on your skin,
don't
like
play
I
with
did,
this crap.
You get a pretty nasty burn because it's basically like napalm.
Don't use this stuff. So thinking about the foam, I thought, thinking back at the old guitar designs that I did, would this foam work better than, the idea of the resin?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not so sure.
I don't know that it would. It has, well, I mean, you can get all kinds of different densities of foam. You mm-hmm. can get from about 2 pounds per square foot up to about 20 pounds per square foot. In terms of the density of the foam, when you get to 20 pounds per square foot, you're basically just pouring resin with a few bubbles in.
Yeah.
And it gets more expensive per square foot because the resin costs about the same, but the less it foams, the less volume you get out of it. So the more expensive it is,
mm-hmm.
As a final part. So I was thinking about guitar building with this and thinking it would be good for, just to kind of solidify and give rigidity and less kind of more you want to have some mass to a guitar for acoustic reasons,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You don't want just hollow plastic that kind of rattles as you play it.
Yeah,
And so I was thinking it might be good for that, but in terms of actually being the stress bearing element in there, I don't know that it would be strong enough for that.
I don't think it would.
Yep.
Oh boy, Whitney, another show written to the hard drive, waiting for encoding, uploading, and commitment on our feed to all of our very supportive listeners. Thank you all out there for your support on Patreon. Thank you for the positive reviews. We appreciate those. And thanks for listening. We just do this for fun. We're not here to create money or be pundits or be on YouTube. That's not what we're doing. We like to talk about making things and doing fun stuff, and so we just turn the mics on and you guys join us. So let's talk about something that's fun. This thing of the week, I have one of these. It was a gift from a neighbor who I played music with. It's a guitar pick that's made with lots of little guitar picks, kind of like that Razor where you get five blades.
Right.
You know, well, because you've got another blade, that makes it better.
It makes it better, of course.
Actually, it does make it better.
You know, does it?
Yeah, it does. Okay. Anyway, this guitar pick has something like seven blades of guitar pick. Yeah. Uh-huh. And a friend of mine gave me one of these, and it actually does work. It creates
an effect, for sure.
An interesting multi-pick effect that sounds kind of like a 12-string.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know, on a bass guitar, it's a little bit like an octaver.
Uh-huh.
Gives you the same kind of an effect of an octaver, although it's subtly different. In bass guitars, they make bass guitars with 8 strings. And each string has a
double course.
Each string has a secondary octave change. Right. So when you play it, it really sounds like it's a couple of bass guitars instead of one. Uh-huh. This will give you a very similar effect, this design. And from what I understand, and from what this thing post kind of elaborates on, I've been trying to find this pick because I only have one. I would have liked to have had a second one just in case I lost the first one. Couldn't find it anywhere. Turns out it's a patent that has expired.
Oh, okay.
So I guess it didn't sell and the patent ran out.
Uh-huh.
And this one maker basically copies the design. It's called the Guitar Pick Multi-Pick 12-String Effect by a Thingiverse user whose handle is T. Callen.
Otherwise known as Tom Callen.
Yeah, let's see. This is thing number 555-9872. How printable this will be, I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Because think about it, you probably will print it back up to the tip. Actually, that will not work. The leaves will break right off.
It won't last long, yeah.
The way to print this would have to be sideways with the edges of the fins upwards so that Z-axis goes laterally across the fins, making them strongest. As such, you'd have to put in some heavy-duty supports to make this work. I will try to print this.
Yeah.
I will try to print this. And if this becomes an adventure, we'll do a segment on it.
Yeah, I was thinking what you really need is not a pick where you're actually printing all the picks, but what we really need is a holder that has slots where you could take just like a bunch of Dunlop Tortex or whatever picks you like.
Yeah, have them all.
And just
glue them together, epoxy them all.
But have something that would sort of space them out into this configuration. Because that's the, guitar picks are extremely tough plastic.
Yeah, yeah.
But 3D printing is absolutely not going to cut it for that level of durability, for the flexibility and durability that you need.
Yeah,
I
agree with you. A better design would be to create a kind of a holder mold and you slot the 7 picks into that holder mold and then dump some epoxy into
it. Yeah, you could do that. You could do that too. Yeah, just have it actually be 3D printing the mold that would hold the handle and the picks in place as they're being cemented in. So yeah.
Well, maybe that's the way to go. But we'll play with this. In any case, and if we do a segment on this, I'll be sure to find my pick so you guys can hear the effect.
Uh-huh.
In the meantime, if you've got a tip, a question, or a candidate thing of the week, what are you waiting for? Send us an email.
Send it to info@3dprintingtoday.com. That's T-H-R-E-E, followed by letter D, followed by printingtoday.com.
Or if you want to broadcast your comments or questions to the whole world, you can do so on our forum. Just go to Google and type in 3D printing tips and tricks. When you get there, if you want to post something, and think about it before you post. Because it could get embarrassing. We've had people post things without realizing what they were posting, and didn't work out that well. But if you're going to post, you got to hit that join group button and give them an email. And as usual, I recommend you don't use a personal email. Go make a burner email on Gmail and use that email just to interact with this form. Let's see. We have a show next week, do we? I don't think we do.
I think we're taking a break for the holidays.
Yeah,
next week,
we're going to take a break for the 4th of July week. And I think I'll stick in a a repeat just to keep the feed alive.
Classic. A classic show.
Yeah, a classic show.
So tune in for a classic show.
Yeah, I'm not sure which one I'll pick, but I'm sure it'll be fun. I guess that's it.
All right. Thanks for listening.